We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey everyone, before we get into today's pod, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle's the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and e-learning courses full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part? It's only $15, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle's an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance in the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, the streak ended tonight against the Dallas Mavericks. Nets lost 115-98. How are we feeling, Jack?
Oh, TLC. Oh, me. Oh, me. Oh, my.
Yeah, I mean, it was a rough performance pretty much all around. Some guys, you know, had worser games. We're going to talk about that. But as always, you can find the Brooklyn Buzz on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, this one just kind of got off to a bad start, and it felt like the Nets put in a lot of energy to get themselves back in it. And then by the time the second half hit, they had no juice. And obviously, Kyrie Irving not playing tonight didn't help either.
No, it was a really inconsistent performance. You know, we heard about Kyrie Irving's injured shoulder, and Sean Marks speaking to ESPN about the fact that there was some, you know, it was flaring up a little bit, but it's not a long-term issue, which is positive. Same thing with Kevin Durant and obviously his injury and him not coming back. You predicted it, Nick, on the last buzz. And so I think, you know, the abundance of caution, as to steal the words from the NBA themselves and what they did with our boy Free KD. I think that this, in this realm, I think it makes the most sense. And we could have used him tonight. At the same time, it just seemed to me that the Nets were just not engaged, really, really inconsistent on both ends. And you know, you can't be against the Dallas Mavericks team who, while they are under 500, is much better than their record suggests.
Especially offensively. They have some firepower they can get going. And like you said, the Nets being shorthanded didn't help. I just think it was one of those games where they just didn't have that pop. But, you know, credit to Dallas. I thought they had some good plays. They turned up the defense in the second half, made some nice adjustments, and really put pressure on James Harden, forcing the ball out of his hands. And that's where you miss a guy like Kyrie Irving. You miss a guy like Kevin Durant. Even to a smaller extent, you miss a guy like Tyler Johnson, who was dealing with migraines.
Yeah, because it means that your second greatest shots taken by a player isn't going to be TLC because you got some shots for some other players out there. That stat, just looking at the box score right now, to me, Nick, is boggling, mind-boggling in so many different respects. You know, we still have Bruce Brown who can get some stuff going. Joe Harris, obviously. Jeff Green, these guys are much better offensive players. And 12 shots for TLC, it's something.
Yeah, I mean, and he also just had that super cold stretch in the third quarter where he was just missing wide open threes left and right. He knocks down a couple of those. You know, this might be a different game. The Nets are still in it, or at least maintain it to the fourth quarter. Like you said, I feel like the Nets didn't do a good job adjusting to how Dallas played James Harden, because it ended up with TLC shooting open shots or guys being in positions that they didn't want to be in. And obviously, given they didn't have the extra ball handlers, that hurts too. But they weren't necessarily prepared for that. And I feel like that's something you're bound to see with James Harden without the other superstars.
Yeah, and sometimes the lineups that were out there was just like, I mean, I understand the injuries, and at times you have to play guys. And you know, we saw Chris Chioza out there for periods, and Nicholas Claxton and Roberson and DJ, and then lineups with an amalgamation of three of those guys as well, which was just very, very odd and very, very strange. So, you know, I thought, despite the injuries, I still do think that this rotation we had tonight probably had enough to get the W. I thought that, you know, James Harden was probably his worst game as a Brooklyn Net, despite the numbers aren't too bad. You know, 7 boards, 6 dimes, 29 points, 7 of 8 from the line, 4 of 11 from 3, 9 of 21 from the field. The game plan on him to double him on most, if not all, occasions and let anyone else beat us. But they were also at the same time, Rick Carlisle and the coaching staff had a really good game plan to nullify Joe Harris's impact from the perimeter too. So if it's not going to be James Harden, if it's not going to be Joe Harris, then it's going to be TLC taking 12 shots. If I'm the Dallas Mavericks, I'm pretty damn happy with that. And the game plan certainly worked.
Yeah, like you said, I thought James Harden got his in the first half. I think he had 25 points. And then in the second half, only having 4 points, and they definitely did a good job containing him. He looked a little frustrated. Then I feel like when he gets frustrated, his defense gets worse, and that's, we saw a couple possessions like that tonight. Just a couple lazy possessions on both ends from everybody. And like you said, going back to the lineups, like, you have Roberson out there with DeAndre Jordan, like, your spacing is going to be rough, especially in the way in which they were playing James Harden, you know, sending the double teams. Like, they were just able to collapse the paint on everything, and it's just, you just can't play guys that can't shoot with it when the other team is just kind of setting everything to the middle and they have bodies down there.
Yeah, it's just not going to work. And I think that we could have used, I mean, Bruce Brown played 32 minutes, a lot of that was in junk time, but it seemed to me that there wasn't enough time with Bruce and James on the floor together, or there just wasn't enough activity. It seems that just the Nets were just a bit going through the motion somewhat. And look, it's a one game sample size. We'll move on from this. 8 straight wins is something that, you know, you'll take any day of the week. And, you know, the Dallas Mavericks are certainly going to be motivated. They're now at 500. They're now, you know, wanted to put up a good show. Porzingis is back in New York. Guys are throwing jabs at him in the crowd, apparently, and he's giving them death stares. So, look, the Mavericks are a good team. The Nets had an opportunity to get this one. They went on some mini ones here and there. The second quarter was a decent response, but then in the last half, you're not going to win in many games scoring 34 points and a half.
Yeah, especially this Nets team. It's so interesting. Obviously, missing the players, but not being able to produce points. Credit to Dallas, and like we said, some of the lack of adjustments from the Nets offense. They just really didn't play well enough. They obviously didn't shoot super well in this game, but just the effort level and just the playing of basketball wasn't great tonight. I think, what'd they have, 19 turnovers?
A lot. Yeah. Let's just say a lot. It was a very large number. And in the first half, they had about 14, and the Mavericks had 24 points off of that. Take away 24 points or shave that in half, it changes the game entirely. And it's not. And I think some of it was, you know, a quality defensive game plan from the Mavs. And I think also it was from the Nets not, you know, pushing the ball and moving the ball better that we sort of have seen in certain games. There was probably one really nice play where that ball fizzed around. You know, Bruce Brown made a nice little short roll, kicked it out to Landry Shamet. We didn't see enough of those kind of plays tonight, Nick, whereas over this winning streak, the ball movement has been amazing. The assist numbers have been up like crazy. You know, it's weird saying James Harden only having 6 assists tonight. So in saying all that, I think that there wasn't enough ball movement and engagement on that end of the floor. You know, it just wasn't a good game offensively and defensively.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about this in the DMs. Some of the players just weren't very decisive in the way Dallas was playing defense. Like, you needed to be more decisive. It's like, hey, have the quick trigger on the three-point shot or drive directly to the rim. We saw guys kind of get caught in that in-between a little bit or even trying to do too much inside the paint.
Yeah, and I think we can chat about TLC, I guess, Nick, because he shouldn't have been starting. Like, it's simple as that. Start DJ, start Claxton. Like, yeah. Small ball was just... I get trying to force the other team to defend you, but when you only have James Harden as your offensive weapon, it's very easy to just go, okay, let's hone in everything here, and how else are we going to be able to actually score when James Harden creates so much for this team?
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It was something like he created 51 points a game on off his passing and off his own back. I saw ESPN sort of tweet out. So I just think that it was the wrong decision by Steve Nash to start TLC. He's not a starter. He's a rotation player at best. And if you had Claxton or DJ starting, I think things could have gone differently. And it could have arrested some momentum, especially at the early points of the game.
I agree, Jack. I think KP got some really easy shots to start the game where it was just like he's literally a foot taller than the guy defending him. Like, that's just too easy. You know what I mean? There's too many times. Even Luka just felt like he was able to get in the paint and do what he wanted at will. There wasn't really much rim protection. So having a guy like DJ out there or Nick Clax.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com/safety, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And I thought Claxton wasn't, you know, amazing tonight, but he still showcased that switchability. And I think that's such a big factor if you want to play that switching style defense and still maintain your spacing to an extent. Obviously, we haven't saw the three-point ball fully, but we know that's something that he does have in the bag.
Yeah, look, in a night where most players who played some semblance of decent rotation minutes to be only minus four, and Claxton was out there for meaningful minutes, yeah, in these 13 minutes. You know, he only had a couple of points, he had a couple of boards, had an assist, did have a nice little block as well. You know, the foul on Luka, I think Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson actually dissected that one pretty well. Ultimately, that's the rule book, and, you know, we see guys like Dwayne Wade, we see probably some of our own James Harden, and yep, some of the other guys sort of do that sort of foul-baiting stuff. So at the end of the day, you respect the Luka's intelligence to be able to do that against a young player who probably should be a bit...
He's a little overzealous.
That, yeah, and look, I think his zealousness... And an eagerness is something that is providing this team energy. Yep. And when he was out there, you know, the one lob dunk, that, you know, he's just a heck of an athlete. A lot of the times when he was switched out into the perimeter on Luka, you know, that was probably his only poor possession guarding him one-on-one. You know, he's something that the team needs in spades. And, you know, he almost had more minutes than DeAndre. He had the same minutes as DeAndre Jordan tonight. So it's something to keep an eye on going forward, whether we do see more of Nick Claxton. You know, what's going to happen when Kevin Durant's inserted, you know, the small ball and such? Does one of those guys totally get relegated? I mean, the match, it's going to be matchup dependent. But the way Nicholas Claxton is playing, I'm glad that he did get those minutes, because I think a lot of us who were watching the game sort of feared, okay, he's out of the rotation now. We're starting Jeff Green at the five and DJ is going to be the backup. But thankfully, Claxton was out there, gave us some spurts of energy, some solid defensive engagement, but not enough, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, not, you know, one player can't dictate the team, and obviously he's not that level of player yet. But like you said, Jack, he's almost forcing Steve Nash's hand. Like, it's like he's showcasing that defensive versatility in which his team lacks, is because, I mean, he's a better perimeter defender than a good chunk of guards on this team, it feels like. You know what I mean? Already at such a young age, I saw our guy Chandler Harper tweet out, and he's usually, you know, gives out criticism. He said he thinks that he's one of the best, you know, he's an elite switch defender already, you know, already being a sophomore player. And you just see the fluidity in his movements out there. He just looks very comfortable. He doesn't look flustered at all, and he's ready to, you know, go one-on-one with Luka, not be beat. So I'm excited to see what he can do, and I like the flexibility and the versatility Steve Nash is going to have in the future now. Like, there's a chance he could play a lineup that has Jeff Green, Kevin Durant, and Nick Claxton, and the Nets could actually play big.
Yeah, and that's three quality defenders right there.
Yep.
You know, and I think, you know, how often can you play that against, you know, Joel Embiid, maybe Nikola Jokic? Who knows? But I want to see Claxton given those opportunities, you know, throughout this season, because ultimately, you know, if you don't experiment with him against those big bruisers, those really dominant centers in the league today, how are you going to know whether you can go to that, you know, when the minutes matter even more? So I think, like all the things that you alluded to, Nick, as soon as he was inserted, I'm like, this kid's made for our switching defense. He is something that, look, and I will also give credit to DeAndre Jordan tonight. He's becoming more comfortable switching onto the perimeter. Sometimes he's a little bit late. Sometimes he's doing a little bit too much. But he's like, you know what? I'm going to take this. I'm going to do this. This is what we're doing as a team right now, and I'm going to be a part of this. And he's doing good things out there too. You know, he's not amazing. Claxton has much more physical gifts. He's a much younger player than he is as well. But at the same time, the fact that both of these guys, as the sort of leaders of this defense, as the centers in this defense, I'm more comfortable, obviously, with Claxton. But for them to show that level of motivation is a good sign across the board.
Yeah, I think with DJ, it's the effort thing. It's almost like when he singled out to play one-on-one defense on the perimeter against a good player, he's like, okay, I don't want to get embarrassed out here. And it's almost like he turns it up a gear. So, you know, I didn't think it was a bad game from him. It was really a limited role. And like we kind of alluded to earlier, playing him with Roberson or even Bruce Brown, it's hard to really connect on those lobs, because typically they're defended by a big player. And that's kind of just, like we talked about before, just closing down the paint.
The awful lineups, awful lineups. You cannot have lineups where it's just two floor spaces in the modern NBA. You know, maybe the old Brooklyn Nets had that when you had Rondae Hollis, Jefferson, Timofey Mozgov, and these sort of dudes out there. But the Brooklyn Nets have a plethora of offensive talent. Roberson is an offensive negative. I liked him more on the offensive boards tonight. He did hit a three in garbage minutes. It reminded me of Ben Simmons against the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight. You know, hitting the three when it doesn't even matter. But ultimately, that's a good thing. And his mechanics looked okay. He looked a bit more comfortable at the free throw line. So I think we know what he can do defensively. I think he just needs to show us the offensive package, and can he actually be a something out there? You know, because there were times where, you know, James Harden drives hard and draws the defense, and obviously Roberson's out there in the corner, kicks it out to him, and he just immediately passes it. It's just like, look, Bruce Brown's taken that shot, and he's not hitting all of them, but at the same time, he's at least taken it. So I'd rather him take those shots in these sort of games, even if he does miss it, and the air balls or whatever. We saw Joe Harris shoot an air ball today. So if Andre Roberson shoots an air ball, it's not that big of a deal, because the best goddamn three-point shooter in the league did it. So I think Roberson needs to keep showing us and wanting to show us more offensively.
Yeah, it's going to definitely be interesting. And credit to Dallas, because I think they did a good job. They had like Porzingis on Bruce Brown. So that was like, okay, we're going to give you rim protection. We'll live with those Bruce Brown threes. But going to Roberson, like you're saying, Jack, I'm not sure he has it offensively. He just doesn't look super confident, and we know his game. It's not like he's going to magically become an offensive player. So I think that's some of the concern. There are still lineups where you can probably find him opportunities out there. It's just going to be tough to play him next to Bruce Brown or DeAndre Jordan. Like, everybody else on the floor is going to have to be able to shoot threes. And like you said, he's still going to have to take some and keep him honest, especially early in the game, just so they attempt to close out on him.
Yeah, I mean, going forward, if you have Landry Shamet, Tyler Johnson, James Harden, Andre Roberson, and Klax, yeah, I think that probably works okay. Or Jeff Green, yeah, or Kevin Durant, or yeah, whoever well, is
Kevin
at
Durant,
the five.
Yeah, that's a big difference, Jack.
It's not too bad. He's pretty damn good. So I think that there are ways where he can be hidden, in a sense. But I do at the same time think he needs to show us something offensively, because Bruce Brown is showing a modicum of consistency where it's just like, this is one of the few games where he scored in double figures in the Brooklyn Nets haven't had a W. And he was, again, in double figures tonight and one of their most solid performers. And he was good on both ends. And there were times where he gave away some fouls that probably weren't there, but Luka's going to draw you into those. Yep. He did it with pretty much everyone tonight. He's a wizard. He's an incredibly intelligent player, and he's going to make good defenders look bad on many occasions. So, look, I think that he could take a leaf out of the playbook of Bruce Brown. I think if he continues to show effort on the boards, that's something, because I think he's a decent athlete and he can get back relatively quick.
Definitely pops.
Yeah, he's a good athlete, and I think he can give us something. And you know, it seems to me that we are looking at trying to get a tryout out of him more so than Amon Shumpert. Amon Shumpert seems to me to be like Noah Vonleh, just sort of a placeholder of sorts.
Yeah, I agree on that too. I think with Roberson, he works a little bit better too when the offense is kind of more organic, like where there's a lot of cutting and passing instead of kind of like we saw more James Harden ball tonight. And for a player that can't shoot, that's like the worst possible situation. When he's able to screen and start to cut a little bit, I think he's at least has some value. But like you said, he has to show it out there or it's going to be hard to play him. And, you know, the Amon Shumpert things, it feels like they're not really interested in his play. Like if he makes a team, it's because they have an extra spot and they want him as a locker room guy. Because I will say this about Shump. He's constantly talking to everybody on the bench, and it looks like it's typically about the game and little call-outs here and there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's still giving the team value off the court. And look, Chris Jones is probably one of the other sort of 15th men, and him, having him on a two-way, there aren't many guys who can contribute on a two-way. And while we give him plenty of criticism, you know, to be able to sort of fill in here and there for moments, a lot of teams don't have that sort of luxury. You know, you look at teams who are lacking depth in like the Boston Celtics, and yeah, they've got a Jeff Teague and a Peyton Pritchard and these sort of guys, but he can sort of capably run an offense at times. So it's decent to have that guy on a two-way deal.
Yeah, I think we understand his skill set. I think the problem with Chioza is, like, if he's out there, he still needs, like, a go-to score, like somebody else who can get the bucket, because, like, we, you know, have seen in the past, like, hesitant to shoot, obviously struggles with his height, and defensively he's not going to be a plus, but the playmaking is there to kind of get things moving offensively in certain situations.
Big time, big time. So it'll be interesting. We won't see him being playing meaningful minutes throughout the night, but who else did you want to touch on, Nick?
I guess we could touch on Joe Harris, Landry Shamet. Nothing too crazy for them. Both guys finished with 9 points. And like we kind of talked about, credit to Dallas's defense, really kind of shut down some of the Nets' better shooters and allowed other guys to get shots. Because even the threes that Joe attempted, I don't think any were wide open tonight, just given how Dallas was playing him. Except yeah, maybe going off a screen at the top on DeAndre, with DeAndre Jordan pick.
And I think that might have been an ATO play or out of bounds play or something. And look, those are plays where it's just money from Joe Harris. You know, there's stats aplenty coming from stat heads and everywhere. You know, he's shooting 55% on catch and shoot threes. He's shooting 60% on non-contest, all these different sort of things that it's just like, he is an offensive dynamo. He is incredible. And, you know, he had 7 boards as well tonight, did have a steal. He looked good defensively. There was some really nice defensive possession from him. And check out OGDBasketball.com for a really nice article of a defensive breakdown on Joe Harris as well. There's some really great detail that I'm not going to dive into here. Just check out the website. But I think that this was still a good game from both of those guys. And both of those guys can provide us value. I liked it when there were times in small spurts when they were both out there on the floor. Yeah. I know that you spoke about a little bit earlier, and we were chatting in the DMs, Nick, about the decisiveness of Landry Shamet. After that point, it seemed to me that the next play and the plays onwards, he was like, cool, attack, attack, yep. Take the shot, take the shot. And that was a really nice adjustment, whether it was mental, physical, or whatever. I'm really liking the play of Landry Shamet, and I'm becoming confident in his role within this team.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Jack, getting them on the floor together and running some plays for them to maybe alleviate some of the pressure off James Harden would have been the move, especially if, like, because both guys aren't hesitant to shoot that mid-range shot. You know what I mean? So if they're coming off a pick, it's not like they're forced to take that three. And even Shamet had a nice drive in this game. It was really just when Dallas was collapsing the paint. We saw that happen to Joe a little bit in this one. But overall, like you said, there just wasn't a lot of opportunities for these guys to do their thing tonight, you know, just given how Dallas played them and just how the playmaking was and everything, how it lined up.
Yeah, it's easier to defend when James Harden is the fulcrum. He's going to be creating and finding you in those spots. And yep. When you don't have the extra guys who can create their own shots, be it Tyler Johnson and obviously Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, you know, it just narrows the floor.
And then you have non-shooters out there too, and it just shrinks it even more.
It does, and the Mavs also threw a little bit of zone here and there. Yep. There were times where I'm like, you know, the Nets can do a little bit better. And there were times where Jeff Green got some nice mid-range jumpers, and I like Bruce Brown as a bit of a zone buster as well. But ultimately, their defensive, you know, sets were just really successful, and a lot of that was because of the personnel, and a lot of it was because the Nets weren't trying and engaged and motivated enough to go, all right, let's knock this shit over. Let's really get through this. Let's smash them. You know, if they're going to give us a zone, we're going to take these shots. We're going to hit these shots. And ultimately, Saturday night, in a little bit of a late start as well for Nets fans on the East Coast. But ultimately, there's one game where you take a little bit from it, you learn from it, and hopefully the Nets bounce back with a W against the San Antonio Spurs in a couple of days.
Yeah, and like you said, Jack, effort wasn't there. Energy wasn't high. Engagement wasn't high. The shooting wasn't great tonight. You know, sometimes that can bail you out. You have a hot night from three. They shot 31% from three, 40% from the field. And then you get bailed out sometimes just because you're more talented. But missing their, you know, most talented player and probably, you know, the third most talented player, not going to happen tonight. So overall, like you said, one game sample size, nothing really to get truly upset about. It's going to happen. Nets are 8-1 in their last 9 games. I think we're pretty happy about that. But anything else you want to touch on, Jack, before we get out here?
In terms of the game, Nick, I think we've pretty much hit the nail on the head. You know, turnovers were the big sort of culprit with a lot of that, and the Nets not hitting their own shots, and the lack of defense, getting back in transition, all those different things allowed the Mavs to really punish us. And then the Nets normally can outscore a team and go bang, 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 but the offense wasn't on either. So, you know, when both things aren't switched on, offense and defense, you're not going to get a win against many teams, let alone the Dallas Mavericks. But a couple of things I wanted to touch on, Nick. Kevin Durant's still going to be the all-star captain, so that's pretty cool. Kyrie Irving's probably going to get picked first. Yay. And I think it's going to be more entertaining because Giannis picking teams is just... Don't want to say that sort of stuff, but I thought that was kind of cool.
Giannis doesn't even do scouting reports. He says James Harden doesn't pass.
Yeah, clearly he does not watch basketball or the new version of the Brooklyn Nets. And I just thought that was a pretty cool piece of news that we got today.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was kind of curious about it too, especially because he's not playing, but it'll be cool. He'll probably, I would assume, they'll still let him be at the game, but I'm not 100% sure with the whole COVID thing. So they might be like, you know, we don't want an extra body here, but at least he gets to pick the team. Like you said, Kyrie will be first for the starter picks. James Harden will be first for the reserve picks.
Damn right. You know, bring the three best players probably in the All-Star game anyway.
Okay.
Hey, I'm just putting it out there. Why not? And in other KD news, Nicholas, KD news. This is KD news. And I'm not talking about...
I saw this nonsense.
Cash Doll, okay? 314 at Cash Doll. She thinks she's the real KD, Nicholas. I have no idea what the hell's going on. But I love that Kevin Durant got in the mentions and in response to this. You did not have to use those initials to get this tweet off. You have to relax with the KD talk. Your name is Cash Doll. KD's a king for this one, man.
Yeah, I think this woman is just trying to shoot her shot right here, making a move at Kevin Durant. It seemed like it was some playful flirting, so good for him.
Why not? I mean, she, in response to that, she gave the quote tweet. I feel like the quote tweet is for more attention. Kevin Durant getting the mentions, he doesn't care about it. Yeah. It's got like 100,000 likes and all the responses there. But when you quote tweet, you're doing it to put it on your timeline and you want everyone to sort of see that shit. But her response to Kevin Durant's comments there, she says, "I'm the real KD, parentheses. Your name, Kevin Durant, act accordingly, heart emoji." I think the heart emoji is a little bit of playful banter there. I call Kevin Durant KD more than I call
just ask
him.
Google.
Yeah. Hey Siri, or hey Google, whichever. There we go. Siri's listening. But in saying that, it was a bit of fun, and it was nice to wake up to Kevin Durant continuing to be the king of the Twitter platform.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we talked about the hamstring, and he's not going to be playing. But I think that's a smart move for the Nets. Rest him. Make sure he's good to go. And we need him for that long stretch of the season. And I feel like also the James Harden trade continues to look better for Sean Marks because, you know, Kyrie and Kevin Durant have dealt with some of these smaller injuries where it's like you had a feeling they were going to miss games. And maybe he felt that early on. He felt like the move was more important than maybe what we felt. And, you know, credit to Sean Marks.
Yeah, it's the move is looking better by the day. You know, you're not going to win the Phoenix Suns game. You're not going to win these games where those two superstars are out because as great as Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and Toyin Prince are, you know, they don't have the superstar talent and the ability to just lead a team by themselves that James Harden does. You know, he's done it for years and years and years in Houston, and he can make the best of role players look good. He couldn't do it for TLC tonight, but I think a lot of that was TLC himself.
Yeah. And I mean, just Kyrie and James Harden as a duo would probably be a 50-win team. So it's like, and now they have the option of having just like the flexibility with all three of these guys. I'm really excited for the second half of the season because feels like this first half is probably going to drag out maybe a touch, guys getting rested and whatnot. And obviously players excited to have that break because they've been playing a lot of basketball.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued to see if there are moves made, if there's anything to those Spencer Dinwiddie rumors that Mark Spears reported on The Jump, and you know, whether there is a desire for Spencer Dinwiddie to actually be in Brooklyn, whether the Brooklyn wants him, what could they get for him? I saw Josh Richardson being a point of a player that was sort of talked about. And, you know, I don't hate that. At the end of the day, if Spencer Dinwiddie doesn't want to be in Brooklyn, it behooves Sean Marks to make a move. No, not for just PJ Tucker. That's goddamn stupid. But, you know, I think Josh Richardson probably has some value on the market as well. It'll be interesting to see what is done because the Nets getting just another rotation player, healthy rotation player, to add to their team and using Spencer Dinwiddie in that, Aaron Gordon, whoever else it might be, it only strengthens the team. You know, we'd love to have Spencer Dinwiddie healthy right now because I think he would add a ridiculous amount to this team. But
especially a night like tonight.
Yeah, and if the Nets can't afford to pay him or they don't want to pay him because of their luxury tax implications as well, you know, just get a guy for this year. Get a guy on an expiring deal or get a guy who you could get on the cheap and maybe get a little bit cheaper than Spencer Dinwiddie because he's going to make a little bit of cash now with the limited options on the free agency market. So I think Sean Marks has a couple of things other than just the buyout market and waiting to see what happens with JaVale McGee and Andre Drummond and all these sort of guys. You know, the Spencer Dinwiddie thing is something that is a tool that and obviously we know about the DPE and the taxpayer MLE as well. But I think this Spencer Dinwiddie asset, you know, obviously he's more than asset. We love Spencer Dinwiddie more than any other. Though he still hasn't come on the buzz yet. I've got the tequila ready, Spence. If you want to jump on before you get traded, mate, or even when you do get traded, well, you're always welcome on the buzz. You're always a buzz fan here, Spence. But yeah, so I'm intrigued to see if we can get something out of that. And if the Nets can add to their rotation, then it only makes them even more of a dangerous force.
Yeah, I mean, it's really intriguing. Obviously, it's an interesting situation given he's an injured player and what he's meant to this Brooklyn franchise. It'd kind of be, you know, a situation and a conversation Sean Marks would have with Spencer Dinwiddie and obviously things like that. But like you said, there's an opportunity to add, you know, a defensive wing or even another big to this roster that could help you in the playoffs. I think it's something you have to consider. And one note on the taxpayer mid-level exception, Bobby Marks tweeted out today, from every day forward the Nets don't use it, it's reduced by
$39,000. $39,000? I could use $39,000 right now, Nick.
And I did it like a rough estimate of the math, and by the time it's past the deadline, it'll be around $4 million-ish instead of that 5.7, which isn't a big deal because it'll still be more than what other teams had. And he mentioned, too, the disabled player exception does not get reduced. So the Nets will still have $5.7 million there. The biggest difference between the two is disabled player exception could only be a one-year deal, where on the taxpayer mid-level exception, if maybe it was a guy they really liked, they could sign him to a two-year deal or even a three-year deal.
Yeah, interesting to know that. In saying all of that, Nick, and taking it all into account, if you're Sean Marks, do you pull the trigger and trade Spencer Dinwiddie?
Oh, man, that's honestly, it really would depend on me. Like, personally, my conversation with Spencer and what he was leaning towards in the future and if he felt comfortable being traded while being injured and during rehab. And obviously, I think it would depend on the organization, too. I felt like it was really interesting. Detroit was one of the teams interested in Dinwiddie.
Yeah, Chicago probably. He could fit pretty well over there.
He'd be
there.
Perfect in Chicago, to be honest.
He'd be so damn good in Chicago and really elevate them. And in Detroit, too, you know, a real upgrade over a guy like DeLon Wright. And I think he could provide some mentorship to a guy like Killian Hayes, too. I see some similarities into some of their games being sort of like bigger guards in that sense. I think that a lot of teams will clamor for Spencer Dinwiddie's services. It looks like he's going to be healthy heading into the offseason. He's continuing to work there. And, you know, if he's back by the end of the season, then cool, let's keep him and we'll see what we can do and retain the asset. We've seen that, you know, we're willing to go into the luxury tax. Josiah has shown that. But at the end of the day, I think that the transparency that Sean Marks has had in his conversations with other players, I'm hoping he's doing the same with Spencer. And I'm assuming he is because Spencer's representing himself now. So ultimately, he's the person to be chatting to. You're not chatting to an agent. You're not chatting to someone else behind the scenes. You're going straight to the source, and it's Spencer Dinwiddie. And you know, we heard when Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, all these sort of people were saying, look, we sort of knew. Like, we kind of had an idea. You know, Sean Marks came to us and sort of let us know about this, these rumors floating around and how they were interested and they weren't interested, all this sort of thing. So I think that the relationship, hopefully, with Sean Marks and Spencer Dinwiddie is still solid. And I think that it'll work best for both parties. You know, if a trade weren't to occur, I have to sort of figure it out and see where each other stands as the organization and as the player.
Especially if it's a situation where, like, hypothetically, let's say Dallas traded for him and they want him in their long-term future. Like, hey, we want you to be, you know, maybe our third best player, our third star or something in that role next to Luka and KP. And that's like an opportunity for them to get him before he hits the free agent market or get him in-house and then kind of get him comfortable. And obviously Spencer is from Texas. So I think that's been another team really brought up too.
I mean, you know, Houston as well, if they're willing to, they're going to have bugger all money to pay dudes. And it looks like they're trying to get rid of Victor Oladipo as well. And, you know, it's not like Spencer Dinwiddie is, he's currently in the prime of his career. And I have no doubt that I think he's going to come back fitter and better than ever. And he has shown a level of flexibility in his role. He can lead a team if there are guys who are out. He can be that sort of six-man role. So I think that a lot of other teams would be worthwhile, you know, pursuing him. And I'm sure that he knows that. And the market being is what it is now, it seems to me that it's like him and Drew Holiday are the guys that sort of stick out as the big free agents. And Drew Holiday will probably go pretty quick. And that leaves Spencer Dinwiddie is probably the second prize, the silver medal. And it's a pretty damn good one.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation. Obviously, we're going to hear about it probably for the next month, unless a trade does happen sooner than later. But Jack, anything else you want to touch on?
Look, I'm excited to see how the Nets close out this game, the next couple of games before the All-Star break. I unfortunately won't be here for the San Antonio Spurs game because work keeps me late and I don't want to keep my dude Nick Fay up into the wee hours of the night editing and listening to my stupid voice at all hours of the night. You're not going to be going to sleep when you listen to this, Aussie Tones, at a certain point in time. When I heard people say they listen to our podcast to go to sleep to sometimes, I'm just like, really? Ow. Me? it would hurt my ears if I'm, you know, chanting Bruce or if I'm doing some other chant or doing some stupid raps. But I'll be back for the Houston Rockets game, hopefully, and we'll see how we go with that. And then the All-Star break, we've got some fun stuff planned. Hopefully, we can get some of our listeners on board and get some questions and some mailbags and stuff. So exciting stuff ahead for the Nets. Exciting stuff ahead for the Buzz.
Yes, sir, Jack. As always, big pleasure. And big thanks to everybody for listening. Like Jack said, we really appreciate all the support we've received this season. And as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms.
Nets World.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off.
Support your journey to wellness at BIOPTIMIZERS.com/balance. Magnesium breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.